He was looking for ammunition. Na 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 na. Going into all of the world, whenever, wherever. The imperative is, see to it that you proclaim openly the good news. There's lots of ways to do that that don't involve words. I can tell you another story. It's not as fun. I had an employer come to me in that very same church, actually. And he came to me in my office and he said, you know, I'm on here about so-and-so who works for me. And I just want to talk to you because he said, I think you should know. He said, I'm going to fire him. He said, he's a terrible worker. He disobeys my orders. And whenever I try to say something, he acts like I'm persecuting him because he said, I just have to tell people about Jesus. And he said, is there a way? He said, is there a way that he could still be a good worker and tell people about Jesus? And I said, well, that's what we're supposed to do. And he did get fired. He never did quite get it. His answer for sloughing off on the job and for, you know, being a lousy worker was, well, I'm just telling people about Jesus. Well, you told your boss something about Jesus, too. You told him that Jesus doesn't change people and make them responsible. And I said, that's the wrong message. So it is a two-sided coin. We are to be bold. We are to let our light shine. Jesus said, so that people will see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Going into all the world, the imperative, once again, is to preach, proclaim openly the good news. The Amplified Bible, as I said, uses the word publish, which is kind of interesting. It's just an open proclamation. You know what? I'll leave it up to the Lord what that's going to look like, because I think it's going to look different in different places. Remember what happened on our antique road trip yesterday? And we're unloading Fred and Nancy's thing that they bought at that very first place, and that lady was helping us load our U-Haul. She was absolutely jazzed that it was a church group, because she was one of the people that owned the antique mall. And she said, my church never does anything like that. And I think Nancy said, well, maybe you're going to the wrong church, you know? Maybe. She said, maybe I am. But she said, people in my church are mostly mad at me because this mall is open on Sunday and I can't go. But she said, I bring God with me when I come to work. Is that okay? You know, it's not about a building. And of course, we're all, you know, we're applauding that. And what's the advantage then? Why do we need to be together if it's not about a building? I come because I need to be here. I need to be around you. I can't tell you how many times I've been sucking ditch water and I come in and somebody's countenance, somebody's who comes in filled with the joy of the Lord just lifts me right out of it. Takes my face and just refocuses me. Sometimes you get so weighed down with the cares of the world that you just need to come in and go, okay, recalibrate me. Somehow I got out of whack. My compass is totally pointed the wrong direction. And you get recalibrated and everything's okay. So I don't know how I got off on that, but that was pretty good, I thought. Jesus is assuming they're going to be going into all the world. Of course, he knows the plan. Literally, some of them are going to be going into all the world. I read one commentary that said, you know, the all the world part is significant for a number of reasons, but he said, you have to remember most of these are Jewish people. The concept of evangelism, sharing the good news about their Messiah, with Gentiles was unheard of. In fact, Peter, remember what Peter had to go through just to be convinced? Peter even argued with the Lord. The Lord told Peter, and Peter was like, not so, Lord. I'm a good little Jew. I will not do that. And I would have loved to have heard Jesus' tone of voice there in the book of Acts where he said to Peter, Peter, never call unclean something that I've made clean. So the all the world part is a no exceptions kind of a thing. Oh, you don't know people in the real estate business, or you don't know people in the construction business. Well, yes, I do. They're people. They're people that are going to hell. Some of them are people that have holes in their heart, and they don't even know how to articulate that. We know what will fill that hole. So somehow, wherever it is that we're going, that thing that we have that's good news, that gives us hope, is to be proclaimed openly somehow. Yeah, and I get mixed reviews. It's interesting. I have this whole group of people. I live in a very, very liberal, anti-Christian area. For some reason, people like me until they found out I was a minister. And now some of those people won't even speak to me. It's interesting that some of the people that actually got to know me and we sort of became friends over coffee or whatever, now they've got a million questions. And sometimes it's coming from a position of hostility, and sometimes it's just coming from a position, you are nothing like what we expected. And obviously it seems real to you. So you just don't know who's out there, who's around you. I'm always astonished by people who, my favorite kind of witnessing quotes, because I was raised in a denomination that where they were like the Nazi youth corps. You know, it was, you know, Sieg Heil and goose step out through town and shove tracks down people's throats and do it all for Jesus. And hey, if they yell at you, hey, persecution, righteousness, baby, you know, and we were just obnoxious. I saw a guy last week in Camden. It made me weep. Standing with the Bible out on the street corner yelling at people, top of his lungs. Didn't even look at him. I knew the cliches that he was using because I'm a Christian. I was wondering how many of them even had any idea what he was talking about. I overheard one person with Southern accent, so they must have been Christians, walking along next to me and said, oh Lord, help that man. Not help him be obnoxious and yell at people, but help him to know the damage that he could be doing. See, he thought he was fulfilling these words of Jesus. Don't know. Maybe he was, and he was just doing it wrong. I don't know. It just made me squirm. And I love Jesus, and it made me squirm. So the into all the world part means there are no exceptions. I wrote one thing down here in my notes on the first chapter of Acts, because the first chapter of Acts covers some of that same material of all of the other Gospels. Luke wrote Luke's Gospels, and he wrote Acts, so he knows what he said at the end of Luke's Gospel. But one of the notes I wrote down, I can't remember where I got it, so whoever you are, great will be your reward in heaven. I just know it wasn't original to me. That when Jesus said, I'm with you always, you can't do this without me, stay close to me, all of those things that he said there in John 15, to that last sermon to his disciples. It's the same as Jesus saying, everywhere you're going, openly proclaim the good news. And every day, see me for the details. I know the people you work with. I know when it's appropriate to keep your mouth shut. I know what's inappropriate when it's appropriate to speak up. But my favorite kind of witnessing was when somebody comes up and asks me. you know, I've been watching you, and yeah, you're weird, but you're not, but you're weird in kind of a good way. And there's something, I remember a woman who turned out to be my wife later, we lived in the same town, and I was in the general store. And after I left the general store, I loved having rousing discussions with the owner of the general store. He was a character. But when I left, we didn't know each other then. She was walking into the store as I was walking out of the store. And she told me this later, that he said, "What's up with that guy?" He said, "Whenever he walks in, there's this aura about him." He said, "I just love talking to that guy. What drug is he on? Or, you know, I want some. What is the thing that keeps him so high all the time?" And she had an opportunity to talk to him about Jesus. And he looked at her and said, "You too? I always like it when you come in here too." Folks, isn't that the way it's supposed to be? Is that the reputation that church people have in this state, in this area? It most certainly is not. So what's the good news? That's another thing I have in my notes. Bob, discuss what the good news is and what it is not. I lived on Cape Cod when I first came out here, and there was a very large evangelistic, obnoxious group, very similar to the one that I was raised in before I escaped. And they used to get bullhorns and go down and stand at strategic points in the streets of Hyannis, and especially Provincetown, because of where all the gay people were. And they would go and they would just scream at people. They would, when a car pulled up to the stop, more people ran stop signs trying to avoid these people, because if you stop, they would yell at your car, "You are going to hell." "Oh, thank you very much." I remember talking with them one time, some of those people, and said, "You know, Jesus talked about us proclaiming the gospel." And they said, "That's the gospel, buddy." I said, "Do you know what the word gospel even means?" And they said, "No." I said, "It means good news." "What part about going to hell is good news?" "That's not the good news. It is part of the story. Yes, we are all sinners. Yes, without Jesus, we are on our way to hell in a bus and the brakes are out. We're doomed." But what makes it good news is Jesus said, "I don't want that to happen. I'll pay for their sin. I will give them an opportunity to escape that bus ride and come with me." And it doesn't matter how bad your sin has been. It doesn't matter whether you're short, fat, skinny, you know, what race you are. It doesn't matter. All that matters is, will you humble yourself and say, "Yes, I am a sinner. I can't fix myself. I need you, Jesus. Please fix me." And I said, that's the good news. And if you're only telling people the first part, then you're not proclaiming openly the good news. Peter said an interesting way that we looked at it a few weeks ago on Wednesday. He said, always be ready to give everybody an answer, a reason for the hope that you have. Who's the bald-headed guy that was with you guys last Sunday? Joe. What a nice man. He said something really interesting to me afterwards, and I'm going to steal it, and I needed to know his name if I was going to give him credit. We were talking about all the people I meet around here that don't even want to. Once you mention Jesus' name, I have gotten the same kind of response from many of them. They say, "You just think you're better than us." Well, and I don't. My sins can beat up their sins with one hand tied behind their back, I'm sure. Joe said it this way. He said, "You know what I tell people?" He said, "No, I'm not better than you. I'm just like you. I'm just better off than you. And that's all because of Jesus. And that can change right now and right here. Not a great way to say it. Thank Joe for me. That stuck. That was the perfect thing for me to file away. So the good news is not that people are going to hell. I'm going to say this very carefully. I do not want to be misunderstood, and it's being recorded on the internet. God does not hate gay people. Homosexuality is a sin. And God hates sinners. Hates sin, but he loves sinners. Please edit that properly. If we hate Democrats, if we hate gay people, if we hate people that are obvious drug abusers, if we hate those people, we're not on target. We're not hating the right thing. We should hate the sin. And I don't even think a lot of Christians understand why God hates the sin. He hates the sin because he loves the people, because they're slaves, because he has something better for them. And it's so important that we see that. And I think there's so much about proclaiming the good news. That's a part of our lifestyle, just the posture that we have towards people. Like I said, it was really interesting how many people I know in town that all the years that I've lived with, they like my old Land Rover, they like my Mini, they like my new Land Rover, they like my pith helmet, you know, they just love talking to me. And then my picture was published in the paper as Pastor Bob Call. And now some of them look at me funny as they walk by. And other people have already just sat down and they have a million questions. Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing. It was kind of fun being invisible for a while. But just let me tell you, Jesus said a city that's set on a hill can't be invisible. It just can't. The bad side of that is you're going to draw fire from some people. The fabulous part of it is that there's a Kurt out there somewhere. You know what he was doing the last time I saw him? Well, I haven't touched base with him for quite a while, but he had a family, and he was the head of the Calvary Chapel Bible College. Not the college, but the admissions and the support and all of that stuff. And he was so fully immersed in non-church Christianity. So you never know who can be that next person that you're talking to. So live it out, folks. I pray that for you. First of all, my primary prayer is that Jesus would just fill you with himself, and then you won't be able to keep it in. You just won't. You'll turn into candy, you know. You just won't be able to keep it in. But in a good way. Not in a screaming at people on the main street of Camden kind of way. I love the end of this little snippet, starting at verse 15 in Mark and ending in verse 20. And so they went everywhere. Somehow I can hear the guy that does the National Geographic, used to do the National Geographic over voice. And so they went everywhere, proclaiming openly, while the Lord kept working with them and confirmed his words. And they all lived happily ever after in a fallen, stinky planet. The secret, though, is that Jesus is working with us. That's why it's somewhere inserted in here, right after the going into all the world. Other Gospels, Mark doesn't cover it, but the other Gospels say, notably Luke, where that I had you stick your finger in there, and I didn't. Verse 49 of chapter 24, Jesus said, but wait, don't go yet. Stick here in Jerusalem until the Holy Spirit clothes you with power. And he uses that wonderful Greek word for power which enables. It's the word we get dynamo from. He said, do not. These are professionals. Do not try this at home. No, what he was saying is, do not try to do this without me. You need to be clothed with power. And when we, remember when we studied the book of Acts, by the way, it's online, so you can listen to well over a year's worth of teaching on the book of Acts online. We'll make you a CD if you need a CD. The book of Acts is sort of in a nutshell, the things that Mark records Jesus is saying in verses 17, 18, and 19. If you look at it, it kind of is just a synopsis of what that period of 35 years or so that the book of Acts covers of what happened. And there are several, I want to make several comments about, it's not a rabbit trail, but I want to make several comments because I think this is, once again, I think by and large the evangelical church is missing this right now in this country. Other parts of the world where their lives are at stake, and you don't dare talk to anybody about Jesus unless you're ready to die. You don't dare speak to anyone under any circumstances unless you're ready to die. And yet it's odd, but evangelism is more fruitful in those countries than it is here, proportionately. Huge numbers of people in Muslim countries are accepting Jesus. You're not going to hear about it openly, not even on Fox News. You're pretty much not going to hear about it unless you hear it from a Christian source who knows. Just so that we finish out Mark, Jesus, somewhere inserted in here too between verses 15 and 16 of Mark should be the phrase that Jesus said that Matthew records in Matthew 28:20, I am with you always, even to the end of the world. Perpetually, uniformly, and on every occasion. I don't know, it's so thorough. Perpetually, what does that mean? It means it never stops. What does uniformly mean? It means the faucets turn on full blast all the time. On every occasion, what does that mean? That means Jesus will go with you anywhere. So I find that a fabulous promise. And that's why I love then in verse 20 when Mark sort of wraps it up, it says, and then the Lord worked with them, and just like he said he would. He made them that promise to stand on. I sort of briefly made sort of a little bit of a snide comment as we read through verse 16 about whoever believes. There's the P word, pistuo, which speaks not of an intellectual assent to something or an agreement with something, but it speaks of leaning your weight on something. It's interesting, the demons believe who Jesus is, but they're not trusting in him. They haven't switched allegiance. So just believing who Jesus is isn't what saves you. It's responding to that by putting your trust in him and leaning your full weight on him. And the thing about baptism, we've talked about this many times, is simply an outward sign of something that you've, a deal that you've already made with God. It's a perfect public illustration. The old me is dead. The new me, Jesus is raising up.